You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition, 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center. The Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Books in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico. Today we are at Windy City Pulp and Paper Convention in Chicago, Illinois, speaking to a variety of writers, artists, publishers, editors, and others who make up this fantastic world of new pulp, adventure fiction, genre fiction publishing. I'm going to have a number of these people on in the next hour or so. And I'll be introducing each one as we come along. So sit back and enjoy as we present Windy City Pulp and Paper Convention 2014. All right, first up here at Windy City 2014 is Rob Davis, a good friend of mine for quite some time now, and I believe your title is Art Director for Airship 27, correct?
That's correct. Airship 27 Productions, we do new pulp books of all sorts. We do what we do is we take old pulp characters from the 1920s and 30s that have fallen into public domain, and we have artists and writers who are interested in doing new stories based on those characters, and they write them up, they draw them up, we publish them.
And we'll talk to Ron Fortier, who is the managing editor, in a few minutes, but how would you define sort of what you do on a day-to-day basis for Airship? I don't mean it as a joke question, because you do a lot, so tell the listeners kind of stuff you do.
The old joke is I'm chief cook and bottle washer. That means I do everything as far as... Ron does all puts the creators together. He gets a hold of the writer, he gets a hold of the artist and such, and then he hands it all off to me, and I have to make it into something that can be printed, sent off to Create Space, or sent to put in a Kindle form. So what I do is I use a program called InDesign, which is you create books with, and I try to pretty it all up and make it look good, and put it in a form that we can send off to Create Space and Amazon, and people can pick it up and hold it in their hands and say, "Oh, that's pretty."
Yeah, and you guys do an amazing job with that, and certainly you do. You also do a lot of the interior art for a lot of the books, right? I mean, do you have any clue, probably in the last few years, how many book interior illustrations you've done?
Oh my goodness, no, I haven't really tried to sit down and count it on it, but I usually try and. Since I'm the art director, I reserve what I think are the best books for me to do.
For you, yeah. Take advantage of the situation.
You're damn right I will. probably the thing that I'm trying to do with these is we're trying to capture the feel of the old pulp books. Mm-hmm. So I try to design the covers as if we were actually working back in the 20s and 30s. Mm-hmm. Photoshop has a lot of different things that you can do with it. I use that quite a bit in designing logos and such. But I don't use a lot of the modern great gradations and colors and all that. I try to make it look like something that would have been pasted up and put together in the 1920s and 30s. So it has more of that feel. Now, occasionally I'll throw a little extra in there, but Photoshop allows me to work in that fashion as well. So try to give it that same colorful, grab you by the throat, drag you in, want to buy this feel to all of our books. And I hope I've succeeded at that.
Right. What have been some of maybe your favorite or most interesting projects that have come through or maybe most frustrating or most challenging, what really stretched you as a designer and an artist?
Probably the most recent thing is we have one of the artists that works for us is his name's Rob Moran. He does this very stark black and white type of work. It's very difficult to get it colored so that it still has the same feel as it does in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
And we recently contacted him and said, well, this is really interesting stuff that you've done, and we'd like to showcase that in a book all of its own. So we've actually put together a book called Noir, The Art of Rob Moran, and it's a book shows some of his pencil work and some of the finishing work that he does, and it's just a very striking book. And that was a complete change from what I normally do for Airship 27. It's a different size book. It's 8.5 by 11 rather than the 6 by 9 we normally do.
Right.
And then there's a lot of 2-page spreads in this to really showcase his artwork, and that was a completely different challenge for me, and it was a lot of fun to do. And Ron is twisting my arm only lightly to actually do a book like that of my artwork that I've done for Airship 27.
Yeah.
So maybe sometime in the next six to nine months that we might come up with that book. He's even got a name for it already. He's calling it Pulp, the art of Rob Davis. So
I like
we'll see if that happens.
It works. Ron's a smart man. You got to go with that.
Yeah. Well,
and I guess I would sort of conclude by asking. What's coming up on the horizon that we should be looking for that you're really excited about, maybe?
Well, we have a number of things right now. The one that I'm in the process of working on at the moment, and I wanted to get done before I came to the show here, but it didn't quite come together, is there's a new Brother Bones book, Brother Bones Tapestry of Blood, that I've assembled it, and now I'm doing the interior illustrations. And I should have that done in the next week. And then the book itself will be out in about 2 weeks, maybe a little longer, depends on what happens between now and then. But that's the big one coming up right now. But we have a lot of stuff coming down the pike. We've got another Sherlock Holmes book that we're doing.
Oh, yeah.
This will be Volume 7. I'll be illustrating that as well. That's probably going to be right after Brother Bones.
You've done all the Sherlock Holmes books, haven't you? The
interiors. Again, that's my prerogative as art director. It's one of the ones that nobody else is touching this
one. And they're also wonderful, too.
Yeah, we've got a lot of people doing covers for them, and we try to find some really striking images to put on the covers, but the interiors are mine. They're all mine.
Well, I was trying to think. For me, you've done the interior illustrations for my Sherlock Holmes 2 stories, for the Gideon Kane comic book story, which was awesome, and you were the perfect artist to do that.
Thank you. I appreciate
Absolutely.
That.
And I feel like there was maybe one more, but I'm not entirely sure.
I did a Robin Hood story for Ian, a comic book story for Ian Watson's Robin Hood.
Okay.
I forget the title of the story that he wrote.
Yeah.
But it was a 6-page thing that was in All-Star Pulp Comics.
That's
done through my, I have a little company called Redbud Studio Comics that's essentially self-publishing, and we have a few other books that we've done that we printed up for other people. And those can be, you can find those at IndiePlanet.com,
right,
and then you can do a search on Redbud Comics, and you'll see some of the things that have come out from us.
Okay, and you have done some sort of comics work for Redbud Studios and for Airship,
right?
Including the things in the All-Star Pulp Comics, and also The Daughter of Dracula.
Right, it was a graphic novel that I did. That's been, what is it, eight years ago?
That's
eight
hard
or
to
nine
believe.
Years ago.
It
time flies.
But it was great. You and Ron together, man.
We've still got that available. That's still available at IndiePlanet.com. I'm looking at maybe putting that up on CreateSpace,
okay.
So it's available to an even bigger audience.
That would be good.
That's kind of down the road.
And you know, I neglected. We got to tell the folks. In your past, you've done some pretty mainstream comics-type stuff. What kind of stuff have you done?
I've worked for DC Comics, worked for Marvel Comics, worked for some other smaller publishers, Malibu Comics.
Mm-hmm.
But probably what I'm most quote-unquote famous for is doing the Star Trek books for Malibu Comics and DC.
Yeah.
I did Star Trek The Next Generation, Star Trek, and Star Trek Deep Space Nine, mostly for Star Trek Deep Space Nine for Malibu Comics. But that's kind of where I made my name in the comics world. That was back in the 1990s.
Right. Rob, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to see you and talk to you.
Always good to see you, man.
Glad to let the audience know all the stuff that you do. That's
appreciate
so cool.
it. Thank
all
you.
Right. All right, and now we've just talked to one half of the Airship 27 Creative Brain Trust, and now the other half, Ron Forty. Ron, another friend of mine for many years now and a stalwart at these shows. I'm really glad to see him again, as always. Welcome aboard the White Rocket Show, Ron. I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time. We'll do a long-form show just for you whenever we get the chance, yes, one of these days. Sure. But I wanted to grab you while I had the chance and talk to you a little bit now. So we talked to Rob about sort of what he does for Airship. So kind of tell people, kind of walk through what the kind of thing you would do in a normal day or week with Airship.
Well, after spending like 4 or 5 hours cracking the whip on Rob because he's lazy and just, you know, I got to kick him every now and then.
He just left, fortunately.
No. We're a great partnership. We really, really are, because obviously we come from two different sensibilities. And we've been friends for, God, 30-some-odd years now, because we both broke into the comic industry about the same time. He is a writer. He is an artist. And there was always that mutual self-respect for each other. Anyways, when we hooked up again, which now is going on maybe 12 years ago or whatever, by accident online, because he was doing a web strip. I found it one night while surfing. We hooked up, and we got to talking about how our lives had changed, what we were involved in and everything. And from that, Airship 27 came about, because
right.
I started to get into pulps, and I wanted to do pulps and whatever. And I knew going in that if we were going to do pulps, or, you know, my vision was to pay homage to the classic pulps.
Right.
And as we all know, all right, I mean, one of the hallmarks of classic pulps was their gorgeous artwork, the garish covers that filled the kiosk every week,
sure.
and the interior illustrations, whatever. So obviously, I was going to need an artist. I was going to need a really good artist. And I couldn't think of anybody else but Rob. And his, you know, as he mentioned in his talk with you earlier, his work at DC and Marvel and Malibu speaks for itself. So I brought it up to him. He was a little, you know, anxious, wasn't all that familiar with pulps in that community, and I brought him into it, started showing him what we wanted to do, and again, this is why we're such a strong partnership, is that both of us, over those 30 years, had amassed a huge network of fellow creators.
Oh, absolutely.
Me, writers, him, artists. So it was one of those things where we said, okay, we're going to do this mutually. I'm going to go out and find all my writing colleagues that did comics and say, you want to write pulp? And Rob's like, okay, I'll bring in the artists. I'll go find guys.
And that's a big part of what you guys do, too, because you brought so many writers and artists, including me, through your doors and out to the public. It's really remarkable, I think, beyond just the material you've made available to the public, the opportunities you guys provide to so many creative people.
Well, thank you. And that's really satisfying. More than anything else, man, sincerely. Because you're right. Because I mean, honest to God, we see what you've done with White Rocket, and we're like, we consider ourselves like your godfather. All right, it's like gave Van this level up. Tommy,
sure.
I mean, Tommy's first ever published work was an Airship 27
writer
story.
Yeah.
And then 6 months later, he's got Pro Se Productions going. Then he's got the Pulp Art Convention, and we're just like, this thing just caught on like wildfire.
Absolutely,
you know. And that was it. And that's the fun of it. And that's what we still do. I mean, currently, and I don't have the exact number, I play with whatever, but you know, as you well know, every time we put out a new book, I have this update newsletter that I keep in my files all the time, and I keep it updated.
Right. Absolutely.
To the point where a new book is coming out, I let people know. At the same time, I let writers and artists know where we are in the queue with their new project.
Sure.
So as I am amassing this over the years, I'm guessing right now we maybe have 40 regular writers who work for us on a revolving basis.
It's amazing.
Basis,
it really is amazing.
And a good 15, 20 of the best artists in the world working for us. So,
it is astonishing. And it's very inspiring to others to see, you know, the consistent level of quality through so many different people. And that brings me to my other question that you're able to put out. And that brings me to another question, which is, it seems like to do something like this, like you and Rob do, you have to have a work ethic and a determination and an excitement about the whole endeavor. You got to get up every morning excited to do this, right?
Oh, totally. I mean, very much so. And you know, one of the things that I started telling writers and artists who come to work for Airship 27, all right, one of the things I do is, you know, you give them the submission guidelines, the same old thing people have seen. But one of the things I try to tell creators who want to work with us, and again, it's that, you know, the 1-2 punch is, number one, you're not going to get rich doing this stuff. I'm sorry to tell you that, all right? So you better love it. You better love the form. You better love the art. You better, you know, what you do, writing, drawing, whatever. But that's the second thing I tell people, okay? If you do not have fun doing this, I guarantee you nobody who reads your book, reads your stories, or looks at your artwork is going to have any fun doing
it. Oh, right. That's a good point.
And that enthusiasm carries across. It does to me as an editor. I get stories in, and I can tell when a writer is feeling it. He's
sure.
in the zone. All right? That comes across to me. I get excited. Same thing with Rob. We see illustrations come in. Well, let me explain. One of the projects we have coming out, all right, will be our first ever Domino Lady anthology. All right, there was a time when we were going to do that. When the company first got started, there were a few interruptions and hiccups in the road.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately what happened was the half project we'd completed, I ended up passing along to Joe Gentile at the time because we
right.
weren't ready to do it. And Joe stepped in, and so that became his Domino Lady, Sex as a Weapon.
Yeah,
but, you know,
I remember that very well.
Right, and so in the back of my mind, it was like, someday we'll get back to that character.
Right.
We want to do her, okay? Well, we're in the process right now doing Airship 27's first Domino Lady anthology. And just this morning, interior artist James Lyle sent us, like, his fifth illustration for this book.
Okay.
Rob pulled it up on his iPad, and both of us went, wow. Okay.
And that's one of the fun things you get to do, too, right, is you get to get all this new art in from artists, and you get to see it before anybody else does.
Oh, yeah, and of course. And there's a part of me that immediately wants to share it with everybody, all right, with the public. I mean, cover art, all right? You're a publisher. You understand what we're talking about. So we get finished cover art, but the book is still at least a week and a half away. We have to do proofreading. We have
right.
to do editing still. Rob cleans up design, all this good stuff. But we've got the cover, and it is the hardest thing in the world to sit on this art.
Oh, yeah.
Interior illustrations, beautiful covers, And again, that's, you know, a lot of people are of different minds at this. And I meet different publishers, our colleagues, and some of them, you know, the minute the cover's done, they get it right out there. And they use it as a marketing tool.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a part of me that understands that, and I get where they're coming from. If it's a gorgeous cover, it's going to help sell your book. That's why we do this.
Sure.
But at the same time, I'm always concerned that we're going to jump the gun because there's such a thing as spontaneous buying, impulse buying,
mm-hmm.
so that I don't like to release a cover until a book is available for sale.
So something, there's a product to buy.
Right, exactly,
yeah.
To the point where it pulls up on somebody's PC. People who follow our blogs on Facebook or whatever,
right.
and they pull up, you know, our latest Brother Bones that had that gorgeous Rob Moran cover, which,
yeah.
incidentally, last night won the Pulp Factory Award for Best Cover of the Year.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so the last thing I want is to have that cover pop up all over the Internet and people go, I got to buy that book, and it's not available.
There's no link.
No, I mean, you've just shot yourself in
There's
the
no
foot.
Link. That's
so
right.
So you have to curb that enthusiasm a little bit and sit on these things until
right.
the book's available.
That's right. I guess to wrap up for now, tell us some of the things that you've got going on now. We haven't really talked about you as a writer, which is a whole separate thing in some ways from you as a publisher
yep.
and an editor. So
and a reviewer.
And a reviewer, absolutely, yeah. So let's hit a couple of things real quick. What are some of the things you've done recently or have coming up as a writer that people should be...
Okay, well, thank you. And look, hey, I'm We'll reply tit for tat here, okay? I've got a lot of pieces out there that are still waiting to be published that I'll mention, but obviously one of the most exciting to me and personal to me is the new short story that just was published thanks to you and White Rocket Books.
Oh, yeah, I've heard of it.
Which is Pride of the Mohicans,
all
right?
Oh, yeah.
And that opportunity to write those great characters. I mean, it's no lie. When you put out the word, and I immediately came back to you because Last of the Mohicans by Cooper is my all-time favorite American classic.
Okay.
I read it in high school. It
sure.
impacted me. I still love it. I grew up in New England.
Right,
I know the
right.
woods, the deep woods and all this.
Absolutely, yeah.
My imagination catches every time I see that story and Michael Mann's movie, et cetera. So your opportunity to write Red Blizzard, which is the title
yes.
of the story, I'll never thank you enough for that, okay? I'm so proud.
Well, I was very proud to get you to on the project, so.
Well, look. Fans listening, it is a gorgeous book. It also includes amazing stories by Jim Beard, Frank Schindler, and I.A. Watson that you
yep.
have to read. Okay, it's got a gorgeous cover by
what
Laura
a solid
Gibbons.
Lineup and a great cover. Yeah,
yeah, so I mean, you've done yourself. And please, folks, go to Amazon Kindle, find this book. You will be a happy camper when you do.
Yeah.
So that's what's out. That's the newest thing. The next thing I have out coming out, which I'm truly excited about, and this is different for me, Moonstone.
Okay.
Asked me to basically write a new pulp character.
Oh.
a new aviation character. And if I run a company called Airship 27, right?
You would seem to be the guy to go to.
I'm a huge fan of Bill Barnes, G. Aden's, you know, Flying Aces, Richard Knight, all the flying heroes have a particular meaning to me. So last year at this very show, Joe and I got to talking, and Joe likes to do these little paperback novellas. And we got to talking about aviation heroes, and he basically said, would you like to create a new one? Yours? He says, I know how you love the genre. He says, so I'm basically telling you, you write me a new pulp hero novella, and we'll publish it. And so I created, and your listeners are going to be first to hear about this, because this hasn't really been out there public yet.
Awesome.
All right? But his code name is Nighthawk.
Oh, I like it.
The Flying Spy.
Oh, that sounds great.
It takes place in World War One.
Okay.
It has plenty of aerial dogfights and, you know, the my version of the Red Baron. It's all set in that time period and era that I love so much.
I'm going to say, this sounds like it's right in your wheelhouse to me.
It is. And here's the icing on the cake as you and I talk, because it's what Joe finally did to convince me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what with running Airship 27, doing the comics, writing. And I'll mention that in a second. But so now he's asking me to write this long novella. And I'm like hesitating a little bit. And he turns around and says, well, if you do it, I'll get Doug Klava to paint the cover.
Oh, come on. That's just not even fair. Doug Klava.
As we know,
one of the premier
graphic artists, illustrators, painters in the country.
The only new pulp artist I know of whose work appears regularly on network television. His poster is on The Big Bang Theory.
Yes,
so
it is.
That's amazing.
Exactly. Yeah, and Doug's a great guy. He's a friend. He's a part of the community. And I had always had that dream of someday working with him on a project. So Joe cemented it. So like I said, they have the book now. It's been edited.
Oh, wow.
It's been edited. They're scheduling it. In hopefully by the end of summer, we'll see it come out.
Oh, outstanding.
Doug will be here today specifically for another reason for me and him to talk about the plot and what will be on the cover.
Oh, man.
So
that's fantastic.
I'm chopping. And also for Airship 27, comics-wise, I'm writing a new comic series for Moonstone.
Okay.
Not Airship, but I said Moonstone.
For Moonstone.
Right, for Moonstone. I am writing a new series which features the Black Bat and Domino Lady.
Oh, very good.
And that'll be an ongoing series.
That'd be fun.
Yeah, and the artist is a gentleman from California, a professional artist named Michael Dorman.
Okay.
And it's the first time we've ever worked together, but it's one of those, again, really, really wonderful team-ups, because we got to know each other online, and I sent him my script, he wrote back, and told me how much he appreciated the script and what I did with it. He was inspired by it. Then I started seeing the pages come in, and he's doing that to me. He's inspiring me to write even better scripts, because he's a dynamite artist.
Very good.
So, again, hopefully by the end of the year, you will see the first issue of Black Bat Domino Lady.
Oh, man. Good characters.
Yeah, awesome. But logistically, a nightmare and a half, all right? Because if your fans don't know, Domino Lady operates out of Los Angeles.
Uh-oh.
The Black Bat operates out of New York. And I'm basically given the challenge of, well, we want you to write this bi-monthly comic book series with both of them in it.
So they fight crime in St. Louis?
Yeah, there you go. They meet halfway. You got it. No.
I'll look for them.
Yeah, I know. And what I ended up doing, the only way I could make it work, and I talked with Joe about this, was, you know, again, the editor on the project, and I said, well, you understand, we can't have them always in the same adventure. That's ridiculous. And he said, no. I said, as long as they're in the book. And I went, okay.
Oh,
so what happens is I write like a story arc, and in one story arc, the main story is the Black Bat and takes place in New York. But every few pages, we go to Los Angeles, because the B story is the Domino Lady.
Oh, okay.
All right? And then when that story arc is done, I've given you enough threads, we pick up from the Domino Lady.
Okay.
So the next story arc is basically in L.A., but we have a second story now happening in New York. And that's how we go back and forth and keep it going.
Very good.
Yeah,
wow.
It's challenging as a writer, but it's a lot of fun. So those are some of the things that I've got on the right.
Fantastic. All right. Well, Ron, thanks so much for talking to the White Rocket audience. Really appreciate it. And we're going to be looking forward to all that stuff, because, man, that sounds exciting. So good luck on down the road, and I hope the convention continues to be good for you and all of us.
Well, thanks a lot, Van, and your listeners, too. I really appreciate that. I hope we make a lot of new fans with these recordings, that people come and visit the new pub and see what we have to offer.
Thanks again. All right. All right, so we've just spoken with the Airship 27 Brain Trust, and now we have the mastermind of Prose Productions, Tommy Hancock, who I'm sure everybody listening knows because he's all over the place, all over the internet, all over the publishing world, so many great works, so much wonderful art. You know, one of the things, Tommy, that I was talking with Ron and Rob about is how they have brought so many talented people to an audience. Right. It's not only that they've brought good material for people to enjoy, but they've also exposed new people to the audience, and you are certainly doing that too. So what are your thoughts about, you know, what you and the other publishers are doing in those line, in that line?
Well, I mean, one of the things, especially when you're talking about small press publishing, one of the things that you have to do is you have to find the people who, A, you want to use, and B, want to work. And we've been really fortunate in doing that. I mean, there are artists and writers that are working for us. One of the things I like about what we've done with Prose is we've not only been a hopefully successful publisher, but we're also sort of a teaching press. And by that, I mean, we've brought on writers in the past that have publishing credentials like you and some others, but we've also introduced a whole ton of writers. There's a writer, Nancy Hansen. Lots of people know who Nancy is. Nancy's
right.
Sort of become a fantasy staple for New Pulp. We were Nancy's first publisher. Lee Houston Jr. is another example. Kevin Rogers, and it goes on and on. And we still continually get new writers. We've got several things on the table here that are done by writers, and it's their first work. So I think, especially with the way the market is today, at one point the market was so closed off that no one knew got in unless they'd been working at it forever, kind of like the country singer in the Western bars. You know, you had to play the places with barbed wire to get in.
Yeah.
Now that's changed, and a lot of voices that wouldn't have been heard before are getting heard because we have the opportunity to do that, and I think that's just going to get bigger.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, right, and the technology that just changing so fast, right? So ebooks, all that sort of thing.
Well, yeah, and, you know, I would love to be the guy who, because I grew up reading print books just like you and everybody else did, and I would love to be the guy who says, you know, well, they can be equal in the market, and you can have ebooks and you can have print books, but the market's not there right now. The market is digital right now. Now, obviously, if you look at our table, we've got tons of print books.
Tons and tons of print books.
Yeah, we've got plenty of print books. But we are also really looking at that digital market because, right, like you said, the technology, you can produce things faster. It gets to a wider audience. It's cheaper. So many people in the last 4 or 5 years have made the comparison that the ebook is like the old pulp magazine.
Oh yeah.
That you could, that, because that's why the pulps were sold for 10 to 25 cents a piece. It's because it was cheap paper and they could be, it could be produced relatively quickly.
Right.
You take that to today and ebooks are exactly that. So yeah, with the technology the way it is, there's no reason that writers who have talent and writers who have persistence, because it does still, you know, we're not publishing everybody that walks in the door. And what we publish, somebody else may not publish, and vice versa. So it's still, you still have to work at it, and you still have to promote yourself. But if you've got talent and you've got persistence, it's much easier to get published. Are we going to make you rich? Well, no. But, you know, and I tell people all the time, I'm the guy sitting behind the table selling your books, and I'm not getting rich either. So you've got to kind of have a passion for this, too.
Well, that's something I was asking Ron and Rob about, too, is it seems like in this field, you really have to get up every morning excited about it and wanting to get out there. And what motivates you to do all this?
Well, you know, Joe Lansdale, who happens to be in one of my books, by the way, says, you know, if you're going to be a writer, you know what you have to do? You have to write. And it's the same thing with any of this. If you're going to take on the load of being a publisher like you have and like I have and others have, then you have to publish. You have to publish. You have whatever you're going to be doing, you have to do it.
Yeah.
And that's what gets me motivated is I get up and I kind of have a pattern. I get into my emails, get my emails done. And in my emails, there's always somebody wanting to know where their book is, where the edit is, this, that. When are you going to run that press release with that thing I'm in? And so I do that. And
who would ask something like that?
I don't have any idea. And by the way, man, that'll be later today.
Oh, excellent. Excellent. Good.
But seriously, you just do it. And that's how I get motivated. If I stop doing it, and you know, and I've had, of course, people get sick and all that. And when you get sick or when you take a break from it, you sort of lose the drive to do it. So you sort of have to keep doing it. And that's how I keep motivated. Plus, and this is not really on me, this is because the company itself, so many people are interested in what we're doing right now that I don't think I could get bored if I wanted to, because stuff keeps coming in. I mean, people, we keep getting new submissions. You know, we have so many submissions that, except for special projects, nothing new is going on publishing calendar until 2016.
That's amazing. I mean, it's just amazing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, our 2015 calendar is full.
Yeah.
So, and if things keep going like they are, by the time August gets here, 2016 will be too.
Man.
I mean, it's that. And so I don't get time to get bored, but that's, I just do. I get up and I do, and that's what motivates me.
Absolutely. And to kind of wrap up, because I know you got business to tend to here, is what should we be looking forward to? Can you tell us about any certain things coming up? What are you able to say now about things coming up from your massive pulp empire?
I will say two things. One is that we've already sort of started announcing, that has to do with your press release later this afternoon, is we have started a digital line. We have fully embraced this whole digital concept with the ProSize Single Shot Signature Series. And we had started the single shots in December, and they were short stories that you could pay 99 cents for, 15,000 words or less, and get them. But we've taken the concept of the pulp magazine, and we've sort of pulled out the staples and taken the covers off, so to speak, because now we have 40 authors who are producing series and or imprints. They're either writing a continuing series or they're doing a from the pen of imprint and different stories. And those are going to be coming out, depending on the author's schedule, they're going to be coming out. Some of them are going to be coming out biweekly. Some of them are going to be coming out biannually. In the next year, we are going to produce at least 200 single shot signature stories.
That is just amazing.
Now, the other one that I, and of course, those that know me know I am famous for the tease.
Yes.
So,
oh, yes.
So there will be an announcement before the weekend is over, announcing an announcement. That I know you're watching.
Only Tommy Hancock would have an announcement, announcing an announcement. Yeah. But you love it.
Yeah. Yeah. And the announcement is, I'll make it here actually, so if this plays before I get back to my computer tomorrow, this will be an exclusive. We're going to be announcing something that will start May 1st, and all I can say is the number 30.
Okay.
30. And when I announce it between now and tomorrow, I'll explain what 30 means, but 30.
Okay, it's not 19, so you don't have Stephen King's new Dark Tower ongoing series.
No.
Okay, well, very interesting. You can always count on Tommy to throw a little raw meat out there for us to dig around
right
in.
Over. Yep.
All right, thanks a bunch, Tommy. I appreciate you taking a few minutes to talk to us.
No problem.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you, buddy. Okay, and now I'm joined by Robert Kennedy, also known as Irwin K. Roberts in the New Pulp community. Bob, how are things going here at Windy City for you, and what's new?
Oh, well, going pretty well. This is the first time I've been at the show, so I'm enjoying that.
That's right. I didn't realize that.
Of course, I'd love to be selling about 10 times more, but I can't complain, really. At this show, I'm debuting my second volume of my character, The Voice, in this case, Casebook of The Voice, which is short stories and one novella by today's standards. It's been a long time getting here. Now I got to write volume 3.
And you also have the Dr. Watson's American Adventure. Tell us a little bit about that. That's sort of Watson from Sherlock Holmes coming over to the United States, is that right?
Yes, that's right. I looked into the Holmes canon and decided, what in the heck did Watson do aside from a medical practice during the time that Sherlock Holmes was supposed to be dead?
Right, after the Reichenbach Falls incident.
Yeah. So there's nothing going on that we know of.
Right.
But I came up with the idea that Watson was married at that point to Mary Marston, and really nothing was known about her family except that her father had been missing, which is how Watson met her on the hunt for the father. So I came up with the idea that Teddy Roosevelt out in the Dakotas, taking shelter from a blizzard, met a Marsden, and he was a big reader of Sherlock Holmes stories.
Yeah, okay.
And so he wrote to Watson stating that if you want to investigate the Marsden family, you know, maybe make find out if this is part of your wife's family. Come on over. And Mary, aside from the fact that she would love to meet some new family members, knows that Watson needs to get out of London.
Yeah.
To pull him out of the funk he's been in.
Sure.
So they cross, and it turns out that some very powerful and very sneaky people also want to locate any living Marston.
Ah, okay.
So they go up to the Adirondacks, where this small tribe of Marstons has settled, opening what is called a great camp in those days up in the Adirondacks for vacationers, the people that came away from the city during the summer heat.
Okay.
All of a sudden, people are shooting at them. Their communications aren't secure. And so they have to head for Deadwood to warn the guy that started the whole mess. And things go crazy from there. And
I believe there's a guest star in it.
Yes, the fellow that finds the initial clue is Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And
I mean, he's a pulp character by himself in real life.
Yes, he was, and he explored the West.
Mm-hmm.
He lived in the Wild West for some time, but he was also at home in New York. And at this point, he was on the Civil Service Commission and did such a good job that when the administration and the party changed, he was reappointed.
Okay.
And that doesn't happen very
often. No, that's pretty amazing, yeah.
So we've got all kinds of adventure. The story wraps up back in New York, big shootout. But then the loose ends. I'm about a third of the way through the sequel.
Oh, very good, very good. All right, well, great. So you've got the case book of The Voice. The Voice is your character. Kind of tell us a little bit about that character. What's he all about?
Okay, he is the son of a pulp era mystery man.
Okay.
Don't specify which one. A lot of people think it's Secret Agent X. It isn't necessarily so, but
okay.
Since he's public domain, that'll work. He is a disguise artist. He is not a vigilante in The Shadow Mold or Mac Bolan the Executioner, although I did write the first novel in an attempt to cash in on the clone Mac Bolan market.
Oh, very good.
No, he's a disguise artist. He's an information gatherer. When he gets information on things, he sends it to the prosecutor. He sends it to the police. He sends it to the media.
Mm-hmm.
And then he hopefully gets the heck out of Dodge before any trouble starts. But that isn't always the case.
Right.
And the stories I tell are the ones where everything goes to hell in a handbasket and he's got to blast his way out or blast his way in.
Right. Well, that would make sense, right?
Yeah.
For pulp, sure. Okay. What else have you got coming up in the near future that the listeners might want to know about?
Well, aside from what I have in stock, and I had a heck of a good time writing Sinbad the New Voyage.
Oh, yeah, and what a beautiful cover that book has, too.
Yes. And had a great time writing a Green Ghost story because I first met the character at the Worldcon in 1969.
Oh, wow.
But coming soon from Airship 27, exact time not quite known yet, is The Masked Rider, Volume 2.
Oh, okay.
I have a story in that.
Yeah.
And unlike the first volume, I believe all of the stories are Masked Rider this time.
Right, yeah, that would be great. Okay.
And that's one of the pulp heroes that I found a late issue of before I entered fandom.
Yeah.
And so I have had great fun writing those characters, the Phantom Detective, Masked Rider, and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a few more Masked Rider story ideas.
Absolutely fantastic. All right, Bob, thank you so much for talking to us, and we've been looking forward to that. And, yeah, I've seen several of your books out here, and awesome-looking stuff. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Van. We'll be right back.
All right, and now I'm joined by B.C. Chris Bell, a noted New Pulp author for Airship 27, among others.
Prose.
Yeah.
Self-published, all over the place.
Yeah, and first up, what are some of the things? I know that the Bagman is one of your big famous characters. Tell us a little bit about him.
Okay, the Bagman is Mac McCullough, ex-mobster, who they sent him to break somebody's legs, but he was related to the guy, so he broke his partner's nose instead, stole the car, and he's got the mob after him. Yes, his first mask was a bag over his head, because he had to hide who he was, but it really delves into, like, Chicago history and the mob wars, and I've gotten people notice that I put comedy relief in between the action scenes.
Okay.
And I don't know. I like to give people a little giggle before they get their heads chopped off.
Is this set in the 30s?
Yes, yes. 1933. We're currently in September. These all run in chronological order. And the first three books are a series of pretty much Mac figuring out who he is. So I'm on the third book now. In the second book, he found out he's the King of Thieves. Because he's the heir to an ancient gypsy legend about the gypsy who pulled the fourth nail from Jesus' foot.
Oh, wow.
So that all gypsies have the right to steal.
That's awesome.
But the trick is that if he does bad, all his luck goes against him. If he does good, luck goes with it. And needless to say, the guy's on the verge of a nervous breakdown.
I certainly would, yeah. And that's the classic pulp era there, the 30s. So what kind of things do you get to kind of mix in that that listeners would recognize from that era and that time and place?
Oh, man.
It's Chicago, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's Chicago. I've got, well, the whole second book is the World's Fair.
Oh, okay.
1933. I spent about a couple of weeks on the ninth floor of the library researching it.
Awesome.
So you've got all the strippers on the midway that weren't supposed to be there. Just the down and dirty side acts that you don't hear about. And, of course, the sky ride gets blown up.
And that's the name of that is?
That's book? The Bagman versus the World's Fair.
Oh, awesome. Great. Okay.
All right.
Very good. What else have you got going on besides Bagman?
Let's see. Well, I just had a tribute to Black Mask author Paul Kane published in the Black Fedora anthology.
Oh, sweet.
It is a hardcore gangster story of the nature, something like W.R. Burnett, you know, like, well, it's like a Humphrey Bogart movie.
Oh, right, right. There you go. I think everybody just figured it out when you said that.
Yeah.
Right. You get that, sure. Okay, and what's coming up next in the near future? What's going on?
When I finished the third Bagman, which I'm about 70% done with, there's going to be a mob war in this one in the meatpacking district. So we get a lot.
Oh dear.
We get a lot of history of. In fact, the story is going to be called "The Butcher Back of the Yards," and the back of the yards is where all the meatpacking plants were in the 30s.
Oh, okay. All right. That sounds really cool. All right, well, we're going to keep an eye out for all that.
And what else have I got coming up?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm working on an urban fantasy where every conspiracy theory you've ever heard of is true.
Well, this sounds great. People are going to be jumping all over this stuff. Wow.
Yeah, and it's like a normal guy with problems, and he just discovers that he accidentally opened part of a dimension while he was going through the DTs. So these people show up and
it happens.
Have to show him how this whole dimensional thing works.
Okay.
There are little things in the book like, what's that? The Trivial Pursuit.
Okay.
Trivial Pursuit was invented in the 80s so that we could create a reality that everybody believed in. Reality had started to get so segmented that these people came up.
Okay.
With Trivial Pursuit, so that we could agree on one reality.
Wow, okay. That's very interesting. Very nice. Okay. So, do you have a name for that yet, or still working?
It's a working title is Watch Dogs.
Okay.
But, you know, I really wanted to call it regulators.
Yeah, but wait a minute.
It's kind of been taken.
Yeah, it's been taken. That's true, but very good. All right. Anything else going on?
I'm doing something for fun with Larry Santoro.
Yeah.
Kind of a science fiction, we can do anything we want in the history of the world.
Oh, very good.
With a couple of aliens that are visiting, and I haven't even started the first sentence on that one. We're just talking about it. So.
Right. Well, very good. Thanks for sharing with the audience the stuff that's going on, and we're going to have to jump all over Bagman and other stuff. That sounds really good. So.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Thanks so much.
All right.
That was Chris Bell. Okay, and now I'm here with Joe Gentile of Moonstone Books. Joe, I appreciate you being on. Tell us a little bit about yourself and about Moonstone.
Oh, hey, Van. Well, Moonstone's been around for about 20 years. We publish comics and prose, new stories of classic characters like Kolchak the Night Stalker or Honey West, Domino Lady, Sheena, Green Llama, you name it.
Yeah, and you do all kind of different formats, too, right? You've got color comics, black and white comics, anthologies, novels, all, I mean, just basically any way that you can get this material out to the audience, right?
That is true. Yeah. All formats.
What was probably like the first thing or two that Moonstone did originally that kind of got you on the map way back?
Oh, the first couple things that we did were Vampire the Masquerade and Werewolf the Apocalypse, based on the role-playing games.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, and you did, was it short story anthologies or comics or what?
Those were, I guess, like mini graphic novels is what we did.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, and what have probably been your most visible, I mean, because you've had some big-time writers involved and big-time artists, so what's been kind of some of your more visible big properties you've done over the years?
Well, probably when there was a Night Stalker TV show, we did have the Kolchak license at that time. That was fairly big for us.
Oh, yeah.
Recently, we just put out Sheena, Queen of the Jungle, which hasn't been around in a while. And, of course, probably The Phantom, as far as being another big property.
You've had guys like, I know you had Peter David write for you. And did Joe Lansdale, am I thinking? Or
Joe Lansdale, Peter David, we had John Jakes. We even had Harlan Ellison stop by.
Wow.
All kinds of people.
That's amazing. Okay. And I don't keep you too long, but what have you got coming up in the future that the readers should be looking for?
Well, let's see. What do we have coming up? We have a series of original Green Llama novels. We have quite a few of those coming up. We have a nice collection of pulp short stories coming up. Featuring all kinds of pulp characters. There's a new anthology of Kolchak coming up. There's always stuff brewing here.
And you had some very successful and really nice-looking Avenger books, right?
The Avenger property has been very good. We have three anthologies of new short stories. There have never been any new Avenger stories, so we were the first. And, yeah, we're very proud of those books.
Yeah, and they're beautiful. Just go, and hardcover, too, right?
We do have hardcovers as well as softcovers as our pro stuff.
That's awesome. Okay, well, Joe, thanks so much for talking to us, and I can't recommend enough that people go out and check out Moonstone. I mean, they do just the finest quality work you will ever see, and in all kinds of neat pulp and just everything. It's great. So thanks a bunch.
Thanks, man.
All right, and now we're joined by Night Raven Studios' Wayne Reinagle. Wayne, I've known you for a number of years now. You're a good friend, live up near my area. We came down together, and I have been really impressed this year with your brand new wing of your table that has all this new colorful stuff. So, you know, I think that my listeners that are familiar with you already from the Pulp Heroes and Khan Dynasty and all those big giant books, but you've been doing something different the last year or two. Tell folks kind of what you got going on now.
Well, these are kind of offshoots of the larger books, adventures with some of the same characters, but not omnibuses or epics. These are shorter stories, 120 pages, 200 pages. And two of them involve some of the women from the characters, specifically Pam Titan, who's the cousin of Doc Titan, one of the main characters in the Pulp Hero series. And then the one I just finished is called Castaway, and it's kind of a lead into Khan Dynasty. You get a little bit more history of some of the characters and find out where Jekyll and Hyde's family both came from and get to do all the artwork. So I've got lots of bright, colorful artwork. And
yeah, they really stand out. I mean, you've got like the really bright yellows and golds and greens that really pop very vividly in blues.
Yeah, kind of leaning more towards the pulp stuff that was done in the 30s and 40s. My first covers were really dark, had too much detail, and when we shrink them down, they turn very dark. These, I purposely went for bold and bright and things you can see across the room.
Yeah, and I've been seeing over and over, people have been walking along this aisle, and they will be attracted to that, the bright, vivid, with the two girls, doesn't hurt on the cover either, right?
Yeah, nice-looking girls, and they a very, very bright background. And one of the things you mentioned that I'm doing on here, and I've noticed people have commented on, is doing things like the lettering more, or the lettering on the covers, much bolder, easier to read, and larger name on it, eh?
Yeah, oh, and you got to, yeah, because your name is a brand. I've always said this. Your name and anybody's name who writes this kind of stuff for a living, you're making a brand for yourself, and you need, it's not, you know, there's nothing rude or crude about it. It's making sure that potential customers know, hey, here is something from that brand that I enjoy, and you have a following. They need to know it's your book, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you look at Stephen King's novels or any of the big names now, any of the Twilight series. The Twilight title is smaller than the author's name.
Yeah, right.
Some of the Stephen King novels, you barely even see the title. You see Stephen King.
Yeah. And that's good because that lets people know that that's, you know, somebody that they enjoy already and there's something new from them. And that's, yeah, absolutely. For listeners that don't know what you do, talk a little bit about your overall universe.
Well, it's called The Infinite Horizons, and it's a universe I came together with. Putting together the pulp heroes from the 30s and 40s, anything that's public domain I'm using, anything that's not, I'm creating my own characters, mm-hmm. and tying that in with Victorian characters such as Sherlock Holmes, Frankenstein, things from the Jekyll and Hyde era, and basically I'm the first person I think that's ever written something I call steam pulp,
yeah.
which is a mixture of the pulp and steampunk stuff, and so it's kind of a unique series, and pretty much anything that's real life or anything that occurs in novels is what I draw from. So you never know what you're going to wind up popping up in a chapter.
No, that's true, I love it about your books. One of the things I think is so cool about your book is as you're reading them, you'll come across as the reader, and I'm sure you as the writer, you know, you come across so many little interesting incidents from history. I mean, it's like you do all this research and figure out all the things that were happening in the world at the same time as when your story is set, and every one of those little things either gets referenced or actually becomes involved in the story. How cool is it to do that? I mean,
you start doing research and you find out Hitler and Truman and Winston Churchill were all on the Western Front towards the end of the war. They could have been within 100 feet of each other. You never know. So, you know, it's not too far off the beaten path to kind of put them in a chapter together.
The new cult panels were starting in the panel room on the floor, so on the floor hall, we invite you for you to join us for the new cult panels throughout the day. Thank you very much.
Hey, Tommy Hancock appeared suddenly. Yay. And the 15 people here are very excited. All right, so anyway, I'm going to leave this in. I'm totally leaving this in the show because a guest appearance cameo by Tommy Hancock. All right. One of the things in I believe it was, is it in, hold on, I'm going to look over your table. This makes for great live radio, ladies and gentlemen. I am looking at his table now. One of the things in Modern, is it in Modern Marvels that you actually had a car race? Was that the one?
Oh, actually, that's in the next one. In the 1908 car race with the Tunguska event.
Yeah, because they went all the way around the world in cars, right?
They went around the world starting in New York and went all the way to France. And it turned out they were in Russia June 30th when that meteor fell in Russia.
Now some,
so they had to have seen it. Eh?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, so first, how do you have a car race around the world to begin with? This was back when they didn't realize what a crazy idea this was, because cars were fairly new, right?
Yeah, the year before, a prince had raised money, and they went from China to France.
And so someone came along and says, you know, it'd be even better if we start on the other side of the world and try it.
So they actually went, like, west from New York across North America to California and then found a way across the ocean and kept going?
Yep, they were going to go up actually through Alaska, through the Bering Straits, and found out it's all frozen mountainsides, basically, and they couldn't do it. So they came back down, took a boat across from California to Japan, into China, up through Russia, through Siberia. Quite a story. It's a huge race and a very interesting read. So that winds up being in my next book, along with Nikola Tesla and all kinds of things cross over.
So many neat things, yeah. And that's one of the things I love is, you know, so much of the pulp set in that era and before and after is very narrowly focused on, like, you know, one city or one set of characters, whatever. But you really just open the box up, and anything is fair game, isn't it?
Right. My goal is, you know, some of the new writers are focusing on, like, if The Shadow became public domain, they'd like to write a Shadow novel. Well, there's 340 of them out there already. So my goal is try something different. Take them out there and put them in the middle of nowhere. You know, have a guy crossing the Antarctic by himself, things like that.
Yeah.
So it's more of man versus man plus man versus nature plus man versus himself. So you get a little bit of everything.
That's really cool. And finally, so you've got Pulp Heroes More Than Mortal, which is the first big book, and you've got Khan Dynasty, which was the Pulp Heroes Khan Dynasty the second. So now there are lots of people that have read your stuff, and they're wanting to know, what's the third one, and what should we look for in it when it comes along?
It's called Sanctuary Falls, and basically it deals with spies. It deals with the end of the pulp era, the end of the comic book era. It's right after World War II, 1949, and the world is changing. Real-life heroes are coming home. People don't need Captain America. They don't need Doc Savage kind of characters. So it's the end of all the publishing era where they had heroes in the books. They went to westerns and love stories. So my novel is trying to explain what happened to all these guys. Where did they go? And, you know, why don't we hear about them anymore? And it ties in perfectly with the beginning of the Cold War, the end of World War II, CIA, the KGB, and the backbone of it is Tesla and the machine he created in Long Island, and how it might be tied to the Bermuda Triangle and Roswell and just a few other things.
Oh, yeah. And, yeah, I tell you what, folks are going to be in for a treat because you get so much for your book-buying dollar from getting one of Wayne's books. Oh, the one other one I want to ask you about, we talked a little bit about your new stuff, and you get your smaller books. You've got the Hunter Island Adventure with the Titans. Did you mention Castaway?
No, Castaway's the one I just finished last week. And basically, it's a story, it didn't mean to, but it leads right into Khan Dynasty. The last chapter is like a day before Khan Dynasty starts.
Oh, okay.
And what it is it kind of gives you, I mentioned Howard Jekyll, which is Henry Jekyll's father from Jekyll and Hyde, and he's barely mentioned in Khan Dynasty. Well, this is my chance to let you know all about his history and how their family is tied to the James Clavell stories with the Nobel House.
Oh, yeah.
All the Asians.
Asian Saga. And our longtime listeners will remember that Rick Lai and I did a show about the Asian Saga, the Clavell books, which are so fantastic. And you're a fellow lover of those books, right?
Right. And most people, I don't know if anybody knows, but James Clavell died before some of his questions were answered. He left things hanging out there.
Yes, there were
four coins, half coins, and he revealed who had three of them, but nobody ever knew what happened to the fourth. And if you read my Castaway and Khan Dynasty, I have an answer for it. I don't know if it's the right one, but it's interesting.
Absolutely.
And basically, Castaway is my answer for Robinson Crusoe and Devil's Advocate all mixed together.
All right. Well, that's awesome, and I can't recommend your stuff highly enough. So, Wayne, thanks a bunch for talking to the White Rocket Podcast today, and I hope the rest of the convention goes well.
Thank you very much. Talk to you guys later.
All right, I am here again at Windy City with Jim Beard, the noted author and contributor to various pulp fiction anthologies and also some nonfiction work, kind of like me. You and I have one thing in common, that we've both done nonfiction work about our beloved superhero properties. Yes.
Got it.
So tell the folks kind of what you've done with regard to that first.
And we'll my claim to fame in that direction is the book called Gotham City 14 Miles, which is a critical examination of the 1960s Batman TV series.
And I've done the Avengers book, so it's kind of neat that we're kind of kindred spirits in terms of being wanting to be analytical about these things that we love so much as a kid and as a grown up.
Absolutely. I've done a lot of the Tomorrow's books too, the Flash Companion, the Hawkman Companion, a couple of Roy Thomas's All-Star companions. But rubbing shoulders with some of the characters and the creators that you read as a kid is just a surreal experience to this day. Very surreal experience.
Yeah, that's so cool. And is that the only book like that you've done? I was thinking you had maybe another.
The Batman one is the only one that I've done. Yeah. Okay. I'm also in a little bit in some of the new American Comic Book Chronicles, and I always get that name wrong. It's that new series that Tomorrow's is coming out with, where every decade is a different book volume.
Oh, okay.
I'm a little bit in there. But the Batman book is the only one like that, and we are just now starting to work on the sequel.
I think I knew that, and that's what I was thinking of. Okay.
Yeah.
But you've done a bunch of fiction work. Before we get to the new thing that we're both excited about, what will people know you from the last couple of years?
Oh, I'm going to guess or hope Sergeant Janice Spirit Breaker, Sergeant Janice Returns, and then the two Captain Action novels, the newest, which just came out, Hearts of the Rising Sun, book two of the eventual trilogy.
And let's see, you've done some short work with, I'm trying to hold off before I get to the certain little tribe. But Monster Aces and Monster Earth.
Monster Aces and Monster Earth, yeah. Co-created Monster Earth with James Palmer of Mechanoid Press, and we just came out with the second volume of that. In fact, geez, I don't know how many things I just came out with recently are all pretty much sequels.
Yeah.
Monster Aces is in, volume two is in the works right now, waiting on one more story.
I like one of the writers of that first Monster Aces book. What was that guy's name?
Yeah, Barry Reese.
Oh, that was it, exactly.
Yeah, he's gotten a lot of good marks on that, a lot of...
Yeah, it was Barry Reese. That's the one I was thinking of, yeah. There was also a Plexico guy, but he's a hack. And then you had a story in there, and then Ron Fortier. So that really was a nice little lineup. I don't know how I got how they let me kind of wander in and photo bomb that book, basically. But I'm glad to have been in it.
I think that was Tommy Hancock's idea. I don't think I had anything to do with.
We'll hold Tommy responsible. Now let's get to the new one.
Okay.
Which is Pride of the Mohicans. Let me tell the folks first what this is, then you talk a little bit about what you did with it.
Okay.
This is another four writer. Anthology. We have two of the same folks from Monster Aces here, although this is a White Rocket book. Monster Aces was a pro se from Tommy Hancock's company. This is from White Rocket. But we've got you and Ron Fortier again, and you're joined by Frank Schildener and Ian Watson, I.A. Watson. And this is basically the adventures of Hawkeye and his adopted father and adopted brother in the year prior to the last of the Mohicans, and particularly the Daniel Day-Lewis, Michael Mann movie from 1992. So, that out of the way, what was your feeling about this project and this property and getting to do it and all that?
I remember when you asked me, that we were talking about something else, and kind of out of the blue, you're like, how do you feel about the 1992 Last of the Mohicans film? I was like, I really like that film. In fact, my wife's just a huge, huge fan of it. I think she went to see it four times when I was in the theater.
Wow.
And she got me hooked on it. And then you told me, like, okay, we're going to do this Mohicans thing, but we're going to do it more inspired by the movie than the book. And it's like, great, because I never read the book.
Well, I know there are people that have read the book and love it, and there are people that have tried to read the book and said, not the modern sensibility, kind of hard to read. But, I mean, I think that movie really captures the spirit of it so well.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's more accessible, and certainly you can sit down and watch a two-hour movie easier than try to read that book.
Yeah.
So, okay, so tell us a little bit about your story and what kind of inspired you with it and everything.
Yeah, I started looking around. You had said that you wanted to look at the year before the events of the movie and the book, and I started looking around through the actual real-world events. The book and the movie are centered around a real battle. and a couple of real historical characters, Montcalm and the other guy. And so I started looking at the events of the year before, and I stumbled across another battle that had some really fascinating things that I think went on in it. And I didn't want to change those events, but I saw a way to bring Nathaniel and Uncas and Chingachgook into that and have them try to change those events.
Mm-hmm.
And then what kind of goes into that. It takes place in March, so it's kind of cold out, and I really wanted to talk also more about the relationship between those three. And I just was talking with Nick Alhelm about this, that I wanted to treat it as that they were not, he's not adopted. To me, that is his father.
Right. Yeah. I agree.
You know, you just move ahead from there. And what I wanted to do was separate them in an unnatural way. And the beginning of the story, they are separated by an event. And Nathaniel does everything that he has to do, move heaven and earth to get his father and his brother back. And there's some bad people and some bad things going on around them.
Well, that's awesome. And yeah, and I thoroughly enjoyed your story. I enjoyed all four of them, honestly. They're all really good, and they're all different, which is cool too. Okay, and then I guess lastly, what are you working on now that we can look forward to coming up in the near future or the distant future?
Literally, right now I'm working on a project for Meteor House. It hasn't been officially announced. We're allowed to say that. And that's with Dwayne Spurlock.
Yeah.
Just an incredible writer. He's inspiring me every day that we work on this. It's actually going to be seven stories, but really that they work together into one big novel for the most part. And we're actually, like, taking turns writing the stories. I'm writing four of them. He's writing three of them. I can't wait till people see the cover on this book. Just a really fantastic cover. So that's literally what I'm working on right now. After that, I'm going to be reworking a Sergeant Janice short story that was only online at the Sergeant Janice blog into a it's basically I have to double it in size. I'm working on that for Ron and Airship 27 for an occult detectives anthology.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was
so good. I was really honored to be asked to include Sergeant Janice in that.
Tell the folks kind of what the premise of that is, of Sergeant Janice.
Oh, Sergeant Janice. Late Edwardian time period after World War I. And Sergeant Janice is a guy that literally goes around and gets rid of ghosts. And he calls it spirit breaking because he sees that these spirits are unnaturally tied to the earth. They're not moving on. And as they say in the book, they're vexing people.
And, that's a good Edwardian era word.
So and the first book is that the narrators of the stories in that are actually his clients. It's, you don't hear it from Sergeant Janice. He doesn't have a sidekick like that, but literally that his clients tell the story. So you're getting eight different perspectives on this character. And then we have Sergeant Janice Returns, which he returns.
Right. Well, yeah, we don't want to give away too much, but yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so okay, well, I guess that pretty much wraps it up. Anything else that folks need to know before we wrap up?
Yeah, they need to buy my books.
Absolutely. That, we all need to say that. Absolutely right. All right, Jim, thank you so much for coming on at Windy City 2014. All right, and that'll do it for Windy City 2014. I appreciate everyone who took time out of their busy days there to speak with me and with you, the audience, for the White Rocket Podcast. I also hope that everyone out there will take a look at my new books. I had several things to come out in conjunction with this convention, including the Last of the Mohicans follow-up book or prologue book called Pride of the Mohicans, which I put together and edited, which I think we talked about earlier in the show. I also had reissues, new editions with spectacular new cover art by Mark Williams of my shattering series, Legion 1, Lords of Fire, and Legion 2, Sons of Terra.
They are both available from Amazon.com. They're available on Kindle and in paperback. Lords of Fire was the first volume was a finalist for both the Pulp Factory Awards this year for Best Novel of 2013 and a nominee for the New Pulp Awards for Best Novel of 2013. So, as a finalist for both of those awards, it was very exciting, and I'm appreciative to know that the New Pulp community and the readers and fans out there enjoyed that book. I hope they enjoy Volume 2, which just came out recently, which is called Legion 2 Sons of Terra. Legion 3 Kings of Oblivion will be out probably later in the summer of 2014, so keep an eye out for that. You can get the entire trilogy. There may be more books beyond that, I'm not sure yet, but that's certainly a complete story in and of itself right there with Legion 1, Legion 2, and Legion 3. That's called The Shattering again. So I hope you take a look at that. And one last thing, when we're talking about books, I'm expecting that Volume 8 of the Sentinels series, my superhero novel series, should be out probably late this year, 2014, continuing the story that began with Metal God in Volume 7. So also please keep an eye out for that. We'll have more information about that and the other books in upcoming episodes of the show. One other announcement that was made during Windy City Con this year is that I, Van Allen Plexico, will be writing an ongoing series for Pro Se Productions entitled Alpha Omega. This will be a sort of near-future science fiction action-adventure series in the style of James S.A. Corey's The Expanse, or maybe, if you prefer, the old Space 1999, but with more action and more adventure going on even than there, perhaps. I'm really looking forward to that. We're going to have all sorts of conspiracies and espionage and military action on the surface of a moon of a gas giant orbiting one of the stars of Alpha Centauri. So sort of near future, near interstellar mystery, intrigue, action, and adventure going on in that. So that'll be called Alpha Omega, and it'll be coming out beginning later this summer from Pro Se Productions. And I would be remiss if I did not again point out that Dynamic Ram Studios, led by Chris Barnes, along with vocal performer Pete Mylan, produced an Audible.com audiobook of Sentinels Volume 1, When Strikes the Warlord. You can have the entire unabridged first volume of my superhero series on audio for, I believe, less than $14. So that's a pretty darn good deal. So I hope you will check that out. That's on audible.com. You can just search for Van Plexico and it'll probably come up along with maybe one or two other things. But it's Sentinels, When Strikes the Warlord. That's plenty enough from me this week. We'll be back coming up soon with White Rocket episode, I believe, 42. We have an episode coming up where Mark Buskett returns for his third appearance, and we will be discussing action Cold War movies from the 1980s. And I'm really looking forward to that one. We've got a few other episodes coming up as well. So our time is up, and as always, we thank you for yours, and the Rocket's going to get on out of here. See you down the road.
Griffin, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek. Classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.